From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
You know, Shai, we live in an age of ratings. We evaluate restaurants, Uber rides, even snowstorms.
If I were to ask you, Annette, how bad was the snowstorm? What would you tell me?
We had 8 inches of snow.
Right. That doesn't tell you everything about the snowstorm.
Right.
It might be a more complete and honest answer if you described a bunch of things about the snow and the power outages and the road situations and whether school was closed. But 8 inches just gives me like a benchmark to say like, yeah, that was a pretty bad storm. And then if I'm interested, right, I can learn more about the storm and figure out like how good or bad it truly was.
It turns out that's a pretty good analogy for websites that evaluate schools. Parents go to sites like Great Schools, U.S. News & World Report, and School Digger as a way to pick the best public schools for their children.
But critics say those sites that give an overall grade for schools rely too much on standardized testing, a measure that some say equates poverty with low-quality schools.
Now, the state of Pennsylvania is taking a new approach.
Today's show, solving the school scoring equation. WHYY's education reporter, Avi Wolfman-Arendt, explained this issue. So, Avi, you talked to a parent recently who decided to live in an area based on the school's rating.
Hi, my name is Jean Rauscher, and I have 2 daughters.
Basically, her family, they were living originally in the D.C. area, and when they had kids hitting school age, were just like, let's find the best place to live based on where the best schools are. And what she did was,
I literally Googled best elementary schools in the USA, and we just started ticking through each of the elementary schools.
You can just punch that into Google and it's not overwhelming, like stuff comes up.
Absolutely.
Like what comes up?
Google led her eventually to these privately run rating sites.
I think that was a Great Schools link that I honed in on.
So greatschools.org is probably the biggest player in this space.
I've heard of those. So what clinched it for her?
So she started out saying, like, I'm basically only going to look at schools 8, 9, 10 on a 10-point scale. That's the one that Great Schools uses.
It's so helpful to have that one number. You know, this elementary school is a 10. This elementary school is an 8.
And then from there, she kind of, like, they had some family in the Philly area, and she talked with people a little bit, did that sort of networking that a lot of parents do when they pick schools, and ultimately settled on a school in the Tredyffrin Easttown district, which is very highly rated on all of these sites.
Thank God for the internet.
So how do these sites operate, and what kind of things do they measure?
For the most part, people find these sites by doing a Google search.
And then they will, from there, either click on other schools or go towards a map view and compare that school with other options.
So I talked to Great Schools Chief Strategy Officer Sam Olivieri about the site.
What we aim to do is help to empower parents to make the best decisions to find schools that will fit their child's needs.
Basically, they take publicly available data that on schools. So that could be attendance. A lot of times it's standardized test scores. There's a lot of publicly available data about public schools, and they collate it and they run it through their own special sauce formula, and they produce a score.
We create ratings on a 1 through 10 scale, because we found through our user research that that is really clear and understandable to parents.
There are other types of scores that are factored in, but there's like one big score, then a bunch of little scores under it.
And we break it down to help them understand different aspects of the school, you know, academic performance, growth over time, things like college readiness.
And these are private sites. How did they kind of crop up, and like, what is their model?
So greatschools.org started, I mean, you could almost imagine it's like a startup. It came out of Silicon Valley in the late 90s. It started off just measuring Bay Area schools. And the origin of this, basically two things were happening at once. You had the internet and the search revolution happening. So people relying on the internet for information. And then at the same time, there were all these education reform changes that made it so all schools were giving the same standardized tests in a given state to the same cohorts of kids, the same grade levels of kids. So you had now standardized performance-based information about schools that you could compare school to school, district to district, in a way that you couldn't before. And so the confluence of these two things allows a place like Great Schools to pop up. They're a nonprofit website. They got a lot of backing from people who are proponents of school choice. So philanthropists who are into like charter schools, or just the ability of parents to not just send their kids blindly to the neighborhood school, but to pick which school they want to send their kids to. And for them, it was just like an empowerment tool. Like, parents now know they've got this user-friendly site and they can be empowered to pick the best school for their kid.
How reliant are these sites on standardized testing scores?
They don't like publish every little thing about the formulas that they use, but I think what you can conclude just by looking at the sites is that it's a big factor.
Children have to learn to test, and I don't think that they should be just taught to take a test, but they do have to test to be able to move forward in their academics.
Like, there isn't that much standardized information about the performance of a school that you could apply to every school equally that's out there. Standardized test scores are kind of what you have to use. When you dig into the data, and it's not hard to figure this out, schools that serve lots of wealthy kids tend to produce great test scores. Schools that serve lots of poor kids tend to produce really poor test scores. And so the question then becomes, is that because of other things going on in those kids' lives that allow them to excel in school, or is it because of the teaching at these schools? And I think it's pretty fair to say that there's a lot of other inputs that have nothing to do with what's going on in the schools that are influencing the outcomes of these scores. Let's say a school gets an 8. Well, does the school get an 8 because it's a really great school, or is it because it's serving kids that would score well on these tests regardless of where they went to school, regardless of the experiences they were having in Mrs. Smith's fourth grade class? Is it because their parents have the time to send them to tutors and to read to them all night? I mean, like, all of these other things are going on in a kid's life. They sit down for a test. Is what they're doing on that test indicative of what they're learning in school or the instruction they're getting, or is it indicative of something else going on in their life?
The state used to have that kind of system that you were describing.
Yeah.
Where they graded schools 1 to 100, but now they've done away with that.
Yeah. So Pennsylvania used to rate schools on a 1 to 100 scale.
Even with a single summative score, most individuals acknowledged the fact that they really didn't know what that number meant.
Matthew Stem is the state's deputy secretary for elementary and secondary education.
You can have a school receive a rating, let's say, of a 95, and yet have groups of students, whether they be certain racial groups or others, that are performing 40 or 50 points below some of their counterparts. But because there are small numbers of those students, they're lost in that single summative score.
And recently they said, let's scrap that. Let's move to a new system.
We don't shy away from state assessments, but we tether that and balance that with all of the other skills that students need. And we hear this from chambers of commerce and workforce development boards and others, that there's a whole other set of skills that equips them for the workforce and to be community civic leaders.
Basically, there are 8 different categories. Some of them have to do with state tests. Some of them have to do with other things. And in each category, you can get either a blue mark, a green mark, or a red mark. Red is bad. Blue is good. You can also get like an arrow, which would mean like you're in this like the green category, but you're trending up or you're trending down. But the front page doesn't say like this school is good, needs improvement, is a 9. Like, that doesn't exist.
So, Shai, you're key to this story because you chose a school that gets a low rating on some of these private sites for your own son. Did you consider the rating, and why did you ultimately decide to send your son to the school he goes to.
I considered some of the what I thought might be the downsides to some schools, yes, but I wouldn't say I relied on that top line number, that overall rating. For us, I would say there were a few factors. You know, we live in the city, so you pay for private school or you find the best public school you can. Yeah. And we actually did weigh both of those options. And based on some personal recommendations and people we knew whose kids were doing quite well at this particular school, we chose this option. And so far, it's been really a positive experience.
So why don't we look up Shy Sun School and see how it ranks?
Let's do it.
Sure.
So I'm going to start. Let's go to greatschools.org. Okay. Type that in, mm-hmm. and then right. we're going to type in the school. They say a little search bar there. You could also just type the school into Google, and you'll see great schools will come up.
It'll come up as like yeah. one of the first.
It's always on the first page. Yeah. Okay, so do it. Click in. Okay, yep. so three out of 10.
Not so good.
That's more based on test score data, and it's test score data sliced in a different way. It's like overall proficiency. It's student growth on test scores. This, you know, neighborhood public school in Philly isn't doing so hot. And that is the story for, I mean, the vast majority of neighborhood public schools in Philly.
Interesting. All right. Well,
let's check out the other site.
Okay, so, yeah. so it's futurereadypa.org is the site.
So what I see here, based on just a cursory glance at this page, is that the school actually seems to be kind of doing in the middle in a lot yeah. of categories.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, so green, which is the middle category, right? A lot of green.
A lot of green.
A little mm-hmm. bit of red, not no blue, so, like, not excelling in any particular area. But it's more like what's the overall impression it leaves you with, right? Like, as you said, Shy. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just leaves the door open. Like, it's not like, it's a three, you know, which is kind of, like, seems pretty authoritative and definitive.
Right, and very intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit yeah. intimidating, yeah. yeah.
So, Shai, when you look at this, what do you think is more reflective of your son's school?
I know that there are kids at the school who are from disadvantaged backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I like my son's educational experience. I like his teachers. I like the way the school is run. I like their extracurriculars. He's making a lot of friends there, and he's doing well academically, just in terms of what I can see from him. And I mean, what we relied on much more, I think, than these sites was the people in our neighborhood who had tried this school for their kids and who had really liked it. And we considered it. But mm-hmm. I am just one case, and I certainly wouldn't want to speak for all parents.
The big philosophical question that all of this raises is, how should we judge schools? And how can we tell whether schools are good or bad? Or alternatively, should we not be thinking of schools at all in that way, in the same way we think about restaurants and movies and other things that we rate on the internet? Mm-hmm. Like, are schools too complex to even have that conversation, and we should all embrace the nuance of it? It's difficult. And I, you know,
right. If you look at reviews for a restaurant on Yelp, that's sort of like, if it's wrong, the consequence is you have a bad meal. But in the case of a school, the consequences much greater.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, that's why I can understand the perspective of a parent like Gene Rauscher saying, like, maybe these ratings aren't the best, but why would I take a chance?
It's your best guess. You got to go with – it's sort of that whole thing that you have a certain amount of information and you have a certain amount of time and you eventually have to make a decision. And you make the best decision you can with the information that you have. And the rest is risk, right?
Avi, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, guys. I always enjoy it.
And that's it for the show. The Why is produced by me and Annette John Hall, along with Kelsey Hansen.
Tweet us at Shai Binyako, Annette J.H., or Kelsey N. Hansen, and download us wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be back tomorrow.